Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome. I'm your guest host today, Mike Keyes. Today we have the privilege of speaking with Michael Flannery, who is Professor Emeritus at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Mike has published extensively in medical history and bioethics, won some awards in those fields. His most recent work has been on the scholar and thinker about evolution, Alfred Russel Wallace. Wallace co-discovered evolution, particularly the idea of natural selection, along with Charles Darwin. And Mike has written much about contrasting the views of Wallace and Darwin. But today we're going to pick Mike's brain for another interesting contrast. And this one is between Darwin and a man by the name of Richard Owen. But first, welcome, Mike, to the show.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
All right. So Richard Owen, people have heard of Charles Darwin, and because of your work, more are now understanding the work of Alfred Russel Wallace. But who is this Richard Owen, and was he that important in his day, and how so?
Well, Richard Owen was extremely important in his day. And in fact, before Darwin hit the scene, as it were, the preeminent scholar in the field of biology, back then often referred to as natural philosophy, was Richard Owen. And Richard Owen was the curator of the Hunterian Museum in London. He had a long list of credits to his name, and more significantly, I think it would be generally agreed that his magnum opus was a treatise published in 1849 called On the Nature of Limbs, L-I-M-B-S. Mm-hmm. And until Darwin came along, he was the preeminent figure in the field, and they became arch rivals.
Our conversation today is going to refer to a article that you have up at evolutionnews.org entitled Richard Owen and Charles Darwin on Race, a Study in Contrast. But before we get into their various views of racism or opposition to it, tell us briefly, because you do some of this in your article, how were their views of evolution different? And then later we'll get into racism proper. And by the way, you mentioned a scholar, Nicholas Rupke, and you specifically cite his analysis of Owen, that Owen's view of natural or organic change had a transcendental component to it that was very different than Darwin. So talk about this transcendental view of organic change that Owen had that was very different than Charles Darwin's.
Yes, absolutely. Rupke refers to this as transcendental morphology. And what Rupke is getting at, and I think he's quite on point here, is that the vast contrast between their frames of reference toward evolution is between what would be called structuralist evolution on the one hand and functionalist evolution on the other. Now, Darwin was a functionalist. He described all or most significant evolutionary change in terms of their function, whereas Owen viewed most evolutionary change, and he was an evolutionist. He was not a special creationist as Darwin had originally tagged him. Mm-hmm. He did believe in a form of evolution that was quite different from Darwin's. He had borrowed most of his ideas from the anatomist and embryologist Carl Ernst von Baer. Mm-hmm. And what Owen believed in was not a functionalist, but a structuralist evolution in which morphology mattered. In other words, the form of the structure itself and its development mattered much more than considering its function. And that's why his major treatise on the nature of limbs was so important. He was a very detail-oriented anatomist, and he believed that the unfolding of evolutionary change could be revealed in a structuralist format rather than a functionalist format. And today we see this in the big Evo-Devo debate, and I don't want to get into that too much, except to say if people want to know more about it, they should read the book recently published by Michael Denton called Evolution, Still a Theory in Crisis, and that was published by the Discovery Institute Press just a couple of years ago, in which he really lays out an updated version, if you will, of Owen's structuralist evolution.
Yes, I remember reading his original book, and he had a nice historical section in those early chapters that you refer to. So, yeah, it's nice to see that Richard Owen's points that we're going to build on his views of evolution, which were definitely not materialistic, but transcendental. There's something beyond just unguided material selection grabbing the next best function. Rather, it's something much beyond that, or transcendental, something beyond just unguided material causes. And that has implications for what we view of humanity, right? Our view of the human condition.
Sure. Absolutely. And I would say another way of putting it is that you can think of Owen's view as teleological. That is a fancy word for purpose. He saw nature and human beings as having a purpose, and not just a matter of chance and necessity, the flotsam and jetsam of physics and chemistry, but rather a purposeful unfolding of nature. And that's, of course, light years away from Darwin's view.
Okay, so here we have two different views of how things have changed over time. So then what implications does this have for our view of humanity and the different people groups on the earth and sometimes labeled races? And so we've got Owen's view and we've got Darwin's view. Pick one to talk about first and then make the contrast.
Well, okay, let's just start with Darwin. And if we look at his views of human beings, as he describes largely in Descent of Man, which was published in 1871. How does he do that? Well, he sees man as different from animals in degree, but not kind. And that's an extremely important point. He sees human beings as really part of animal nature. In fact, he even believes that our higher aspirations of religion and religious thought really just come from our natural social development and purely due to naturalistic explanations. But because he sort of rejects this idea of human exceptionalism, he also spends a lot of time discussing in The Descent of Man the various categories of race. And he cites the craniotomists Paul Broca and Joseph Bernard Davis with a great deal of approval. Now, who were these guys? These were physicians and anatomists who literally collected skulls. And their idea was to fill the cranial cavity with beads, and the one with the most beads wins. In other words, the largest cranial capacity is obviously the smartest group of individuals. And then they would categorize these skulls according to race. So it was their way of ranking racial categories. And Darwin approved of this quite explicitly. Now, that's the Darwin side of it. And so he said you could take these cranial rankings and literally create a hierarchy of races. Owen said that's nonsense. And in fact, earlier on, he had even attacked Robert Chambers' argument in Vestiges of the Natural History of Creation, which sort of preceded Darwin's work in 1844. And he attacked it on the basis of the emergence of man from beast. And he said, you really can't make connections between evolution and racial hierarchies. He himself had done his own investigations comparing different skulls and different races. And he said, you know, there's absolutely no correlation between them. And this idea that you can rank and order and even connect evolutionarily human beings with, say, the higher apes is just nonsense. It can't be done.
Right.
And they had a long and ongoing debate about that. Thomas Henry Huxley, Darwin's bulldog defender, gets involved, and it really became a nasty debate. It's a debate, I would argue, and I say so in the article we're referencing today, it's a debate that Owen should have won.
Yeah, so you have Darwin and his defender Huxley arguing that there are certain groups of people or so-called races that are less advanced or more animal-like in certain degrees, and they try to objectify it with studies of cranial capacity and so on. Never mind that brilliant scientists can have a really small cranial capacity or vice versa. You know, there's no real good correlation there, even on the individual level. But we're looking for some way to give a scientific justification for the evolution of humanity. But that included, even though they thought we were all together and that we evolved from common ancestor, they still thought that, right, that some of us were less evolved than others, particularly certain races were lower beneath others and were less worthy to live and would eventually be exterminated, right? Sort of a genocidal racism.
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah, that's a very important point. Even though, let's say, Darwin supported the idea of common descent, right?
Yeah.
A monogenist view from a common ancestor. A common ancestry did not equate to equality of the races by any stretch of the imagination. And in fact, in Darwin's scenario, common descent implied difference and struggle within our own racial groups.
Right.
And in fact, he quite explicitly suggested that through time, evolution would work out so that the less fit, and I'll put fit in quotes, the less fit races would be exterminated by the so-called, quote, superior races. And that was woven into his theory.
Right. Whereas, so Owen, in contrast, saw all humans as having something fundamentally in common and very, very different than animals, right? And that's what unifies us and makes us exceptional.
Yes, Owen had a deep-seated conviction that humanity was separate and distinct from the animal kingdom, and he argued on the scientific basis of human exceptionalism. And in fact, he even went so far as to say, well, humans actually deserve taxonomically to be classed separate from the higher apes and that sort of thing.
Right.
In fact, we deserve own unique classification because we are so unique. And as this worked out in the debate, there's I don't want to jump ahead here, but it's an interesting book that I would encourage everyone to read. It's Christopher Cousins, called Owen's Ape and Darwin's Bulldog. And it's a great book that describes in detail this debate between Owen and Huxley and the degree to which Huxley would engage in sleight of hand and really sort of underhanded methods to bring home his point that he was talking science and Owen wasn't. And he would do things like making comparisons of the ape brain with the human brain. He would inordinately enlarge the ape brain and make them look like they were very similar. And that's the kind of nonsense that Huxley would engage in to support, again, quite frankly, not just Darwin's racial beliefs, but his own racial beliefs. Huxley went out and said, I quoted in the article, he said, it may be true that some Negroes are better than some white men, but no rational man cognizant of the facts believes that the average Negro is the equal, still less the superior, of the average white man. That's about as racist a statement, I think, as you could make.
Yeah, sad. Ideas have consequences. Bad ideas have bad consequences. And so, although most Darwinists today are not racist, Darwinism,
right,
as a way of looking at nature leaves the door wide open for racist ideology, which is really sad. And so it's interesting, some might say, well, as you mentioned in your own article, that some might say, well, Darwin, Huxley, they were just a product of their time. Now we know better. But you point out that Richard Owen was living at that same time and was going toe-to-toe with them, saying that they got the science wrong and that the implications of their erroneous scientific views were demeaning to the unity of humanity and to our distinctive traits that make us special and worth taking care of. And so,
absolutely true. Absolutely true. And I think these ideas are particularly bad And I agree wholeheartedly, you know, neo-Darwinists today are, you know, certainly not racist in the same way that Huxley and Darwin was in their day. But these ideas, when they were being discussed and they were being debated amongst the general population, were ideas that Huxley and Darwin were promoting under the name of science. And when that happens, I think you have some serious, serious problems.
Yeah, definitely agreed. Well, thank you so much, Mike, for explaining in a little more detail, in a conversational way, how Richard Owen and Charles Darwin were similar in some respects, but had this huge, deep divide that is still seen in contemporary discussions, such as in Michael Denton's book, Evolution, Still a Theory in Crisis, as he refers to this historical backdrop and how it plays out today in debates about evolution and the meaning of the human condition. So I'm glad that we could talk, and thanks for joining us today, Mike.
Thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate it.
I'm Mike Keyes. Thanks for joining us at ID the Future. Check out evolutionnews.org for more details and links. Just check out the article called Richard Owen and Charles Darwin on Race, A Study in Contrast. Again, I'm Mike Keyes. Thanks for joining us.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.